This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am thrilled I have in the studio with me today our very, very special, she's always helping us out, Rita Moreau. She's here. She normally does our book buzzes, and she is herself a great author. But I have on the phone, Rita, today, a really wonderful, wonderful writer, and a book that I'm sure that you will enjoy as much as I have. And it is by Lori A. Page. Lori, are you there?
I am. Thank you for those kind words.
Well, Professor Page, you are, I have to tell everyone that you are a professor at American International College. And your book, The Gothic Romance Wave, A Critical History of the Mass Market Novel, 1960 to 1993. Whew, a long title. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a real problem with this book, because I'm reading this book and you keep mentioning all the books that I love. And so I'm reading your book, I'm reading along, and then I say, oh my gosh, I've read that book. And so, like, I get to Victoria Holt, who I love. I mean,
a classic.
Shivering Sand is absolutely one of my favorite books. I read that when I was a teenager. I'm not saying how long ago that, but I read it as a teenager. Rita Moreau is in the studio with me, and Rita Moreau writes, we'd say, cozy mysteries with an edge and a touch of paranormal. And so I know that she will enjoy hearing about your book, about Gothic romances and the whole Gothic period. I found out so much in this book about how very popular and the kind of numbers and the number of books that they were selling.
Yeah, very impressive for those days.
So tell us, explain to the listeners what we're talking about when we talk about Gothic romance.
Okay, well, so they're popularly known as women running from the house books. And everybody has seen them. If you go to any used book sale or, you know, antiquarian bookstore or, you know, garage sale, you see them all over the place. They have a big manor house or castle in the back, gloomy atmosphere, and a woman running as fast as she can with a big white nightgown billowing behind her and bare feet. And, you know, it's a very romantic setting, and they always have names like, you know, The Legacy of Winterwick or something like that. So they're romance novels, light mystery. Sometimes there's a little paranormal going on. Sometimes there's a vampire or a werewolf. But yeah, they're pure entertainment. They have no literary pretensions at all, and they're very successful at entertaining people.
Where did the whole idea come from? Which were the first Gothic style books?
Well, in my book, I go all the way back to 1764, The Castle of Otranto, which was written by a man, Horace Walpole. Then they became known as women's fiction. 1792, Anne Radcliffe, The Mysteries of Udolpho, a mega bestseller in England around the time of Jane Austen. And then Jane Austen actually tried her hand at writing one, came out more of a parody, Northanger Abbey.
One of my least favorite of her books. You know, I moved to England so that I bought a house near where Jane Austen was born.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of my early years were really devoted to Jane Austen, and I saved my money so that when I was 21 years old, I could buy a cottage near Jane Austen. And, you know, talking about in the Gothics, they always have this old manor house or a castle, and I had an old cottage.
Yeah.
I don't think she was very successful. But what about the Bronte girls?
Yes, and then we skip ahead to the 1840s. And the publication of Jane Eyre and Wuthering Heights, which are kind of the standard that everybody knows. When people think of Gothics, they think of Jane Eyre mostly, and Wuthering Heights also, which is, has a slightly different storyline than a typical Gothic. But, you know, those were really the blueprint for so many things. And, you know, then in between, we have sort of literary Gothics like Dracula, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, The Picture of Dorian Gray, and things like that. But the period that I really focused on started in about 1960 with Victoria Holt's Mistress of Melun, an amazing bestseller. People loved it all over the world. It made her fortune. it made her famous, and everybody wanted in on this. So she sort of adapted the Jane Eyre formula, for a more modern audience. And, you know, it was just a mega hit, and there were so many other books that, you know, I wouldn't say copied, but, you know, built on that sort of success, or some might even say formula, and they just became more and more popular, and there were millions and millions of them sold between the 1960 and 1993.
And of course, 1993 is the ending of that period, because tell us why.
There was a publisher, Zebra Books, which is still around. They had a line called Zebra Gothic. 1993, they closed it down. That was the last Gothic line that had the name Gothic in it. You see them now and then. They pop up. Sometimes Harlequin Historicals will still publish a Gothic, but they don't call them that anymore.
Yes, I was interested in how Harlequin was formed. Tell us a little bit about Harlequin.
Harlequin, well, you know, they had very great success just, you know, focusing in on that market for women who wanted to read just a simple, straightforward love story. They wrote a lot of, novels featuring nurses. And they did some gothics, and they sometimes combined them. So you had a nurse at the castle. Some of the covers show a nurse in full nurse uniform running as fast as in the castle as she can. And Harlequin was never really known as much for gothics as some of the presses like Ace and Signet. And Ace, of course, is known today for pulp science fiction, but they actually did a lot of gothic novels as well. One line for men, one for women, I guess.
Essentially, the Gothics had a young woman, always a young woman.
Yes. Yep.
You know, ready to get 20-ish. Married.
Ready to get married, absolutely. Yes.
And one good-looking guy, and sometimes somebody who's not so good-looking.
Charismatic.
Yeah, charismatic. That's right. Mm-hmm. So he could be not gorgeous, but
right. Doesn't have to be gorgeous. He's gorgeous to her. In her eyes, he's perfect.
And usually had money, too. Somehow.
Most always had money, yes.
Somehow money makes even somebody who's not that handsome very attractive.
This is true, yes. Well, sure. It's the fairy tale formula, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it goes all the way back to Cinderella, you know?
It does. And the funny thing is that, the covers reflect this kind of, Freudian thing all the time in the covers, too. But still, so many of the women are actually very strong.
They are, yes.
It's not that
people
they're
don't realize
weak.
That. No, they're not.
They're strong women. They're stepping out there, and I love the ones. Well, it's like Jane Eyre. I mean, she went out there, and she, you know.
Feisty, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I
Absolutely,
love.
Absolutely, yes. The character has nothing. She has no connection. She has no money. She has no power. All she has to give is her love. And in many cases, that's enough to defeat evil. And I think that's the message that audiences enjoy. Right, you don't have to have any special power, you don't have to have a big sword, you don't have to have a big wallet, you just have to have a good heart, and that's enough to defeat evil, and people like that.
Tell us about some of the best-selling of the Gothic writers during that period.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's Victoria Holt, as you mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
She's easily still the best-known today.
I actually went over there by the White Cliffs of Dover. Mm-hmm. To see the Shivering Sands.
Oh, great, yeah.
And I was very careful that I did not walk in the Shivering
Sands. Right,
it's a literary pilgrimage.
It was so,
mm-hmm. I was so thrilled because it was strange. I had not read that book for 25 years. And, you know, I was in England and I went there and I was like, I could remember the story, and it's a wonderful story. It really is. I think she was a great writer. Very underrated, because I thought she was terrific. Her actual writing.
Incredibly prolific.
Oh, my gosh.
She had three or four pen names.
Yeah, Jean Plady, one of them.
Yes.
If you want to just have a sort of general knowledge of British history, you cannot go wrong with reading her. Because, again, one of the things about Gothic books, pacing, they move fast. They don't drag
on.
Very
well plotted, yes. She had a real sense of how to tell a story. A lot of the Gothic authors did. They may not have been particularly literary, the stories were, you know, very fast-paced. And, of course, the literary, you know, gatekeepers poo-poo that. Well, that just shows it's popular fiction. But, you know, the truth is, people respond to a good story now, just as they did in the days when the fairy tales were, you know, the going thing.
Well, as I was saying, I'm reading your book, and I stopped, and I went back, and I read Shivering Sands. I read Jane Eyre again, and it holds up. I mean, it's beautiful.
Yep,
I had so much fun rereading that. And, you know, I have a radio program, and I get like 20 books, 25 books a week now from publishers. So I have a lot of books to read, and I really don't have time to go back.
Right.
But the way you wrote in your book, I think your book is so well written.
You
actually have a good pacing because you go through the periods, you go through the, you know, the different authors. And I thought, whoa, this is really nice. I enjoyed reading. I think anybody who loves reading in general will find it fascinating because you have so many facts in there about publishing world, about about plotting, about all of this, that it's a very enjoyable book.
Well, I had great fun writing it. I mean, I looked at it as writing a story. It was a story of the Gothic, and it was very dramatic.
It is. I think it's a fantastic book. All writers should just get it, because what I liked is that there were authors whose works I hadn't read, and somehow I had missed them. And so it was fun that I could now sort of say, I'm going to go back and I'm going to read some of these that I missed, because you write so, you make it so fascinating that people will want to read these books.
Well, they're very much worth reading, I think. And, you know, when I did my research, I would buy bins and bins of these things at used book sales and that kind of thing. And I have hundreds of them stacked up in my house, and I want to read them all. You know, I had to pick and choose for the book, or I would still be writing it today. Heck, I'd still be doing the research. But, you just can't get enough of them. And some days I would read two in a row, just in one sitting.
Well, and you mentioned that it was really the fact that they made them pocket-sized, that women could just carry them around because...
Yeah, they're very light.
Women can't carry a hardback book.
And Harlequin was able to capitalize on that, too. I mean, to this day, when you are talking about a romance novel, you don't say a romance novel. Many times you just say a Harlequin. Even if it's not published by Harlequin, everybody knows what you're talking about. You know, they really cornered the market. They made them, you know, portable, disposable, cheap, and they had the good sense to market them in grocery stores and places where women shopped. I mean, it's always been a genre that's unapologetically geared toward women. And, of course, that's why people sneer at it. Oh, it's a, you know, women's book and, you know, romance novel. People say it like that. But, I mean, it's a very interesting genre, and I don't see that there's anything wrong with that, you know?
No, absolutely not. The number of hours that people have spent just getting away from escaping into this world. And you learn so much. I love the ones as for example... Georgia Hare, when she writes, whoa, you really get a sense of the atmosphere and the clothes.
Yes. Another classic.
Oh, isn't she great?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I just love her. It's so much fun to read her because you're learning history, too, as you're reading the books, and I love that.
Exactly. I mean, I amaze my students sometimes. I rattle off, you know, the kings and queens in order. You know, I learned all that from fiction, you know, Regency and Gothic fiction.
That's why I think really so often, you know, particularly young people get to, you know, think that history's not fun. But then when you read these kind of books, they're fun.
Story about people, you know.
All young women are struggling in some sense or the other. You know, so it's fun to sort of see how they handle it. And so many of them handle it very well. I mean, they make decisions and they take over the whole situation and they get rid of the bad people so many times
they're in control of the castle at the end. People don't understand that. They think they marry the master of the castle and become subservient to him. No, it's the other way around.
Exactly.
They teach him how to live, and they cleanse the castle of whatever bad associations it's had in the past. They're not always supernatural. Sometimes they're just, you know, an evil man. It's always a man had owned the castle, and they have to drive out, you know, the bad juju or whatever you want to call it. And they do that just with the power of their love, you know. Jane Eyre is a perfect example of that.
They touch on so many subjects like a suffragette or you know, all these things that really are so relevant to today's life.
Yes.
Understanding that women can be strong. Women can say no. And boy, did Jane Eyre say no? I mean, like...
Yes, exactly.
I'm out of here, you know.
Yes. At the end of the book, she literally becomes his eyes.
Exactly.
She sees for him.
It is so beautiful. And, you know, I went back and I'm reading it. I'm saying, whoa, this is a good story. As a matter of fact, then after I read it, I also got the Audible book. And it's so great. And I'm going to look at some of these books now on Audible because I think that would also be fun.
It's funny you say that because one of the editors at McFarland Press that published the book told me the same thing. She said, well, you know, having edited your book, I might have just put a few Gothics on my Kindle. So, you know, anything I can do to bring these books back, I couldn't be more thrilled.
So you're teaching a class specifically in Gothic fiction?
Yes, I teach a class in Gothic novels, and I teach one that's more geared around vampire literature.
So how do the young people react to
it? They love it. They love Gothic. They love vampires. They're into. I mean, look at the popularity of Twilight.
Oh, wow. You know?
Teenagers like this stuff. They respond to it. I've never had a bad time in class teaching Jane Eyre.
Do you know 14 very unhappy people? The 14 people who rejected Twilight.
I mean, what were they thinking?
I mean, can you imagine? They rejected her. I can't even fathom how much money she's made. I mean, it is...
I mean, I mentioned that in my book, how many copies she sold or something. It's unbelievable. I can't think of the exact figure right now, but many, many, many millions, almost as many as Harry Potter.
And she was rejected. And really, badly rejected.
Well, but we all know what that's like. Believe me, I've been rejected myself. I shall also have my revenge on you.
Yeah, I think Rita understands that thing,
yes.
Too. You know, I have so many wonderful writers. What?
The power of the pen.
The power of the pen, that's right. You can get even. But speaking of that, okay, let's talk. So you decided, after having hundreds and hundreds of Gothic books around you, decided to write one yourself. So tell us about that.
Yes, well, I wrote one called Julius, Heart of Iron, and it's about a vampire and his two vampire brothers and an innocent young woman who has been adopted by a creepy antiquarian bookseller. And the vampire comes to the antiquarian bookseller because he wants to buy a spell book, and he ends up saving this young woman from a fate worse than death, which is marrying a very unpleasant, evil man, and so she ends up marrying this vampire in a marriage of convenience. So it's sort of like a Regency, well, Victorian, actually. Lots of Gothic elements.
So how did you find her? It's not as easy as people think. People sometimes, they denigrate Gothic. They denigrate, they say, easy writing. I don't think so.
It is not at all, no. And your friend there was cozies. I dabble in writing cozies as well, also very difficult. You really have to plot it out. You have to know where to place the clues. And, you know, it gets harder every year because you don't want to repeat anything that's already been done. And the more stuff comes out, the more you can't do because it's already been done, you know. So.
And there's a lot out there.
Yeah, and you have to keep the pace going, too.
You
mentioned, you want a real page turner. You know, you don't want anything that's slow and descriptive and overly symbolic. I mean, if you're skillful, you can weave that in, but you've got to keep the pot boiling.
Yeah, you don't want people to put the book down. It's like
you don't want to put it down, yes. Well, and I guess I was successful, at least in my Gothic Wave book, since people say they can't put it down, so.
It is. Yeah. It's great. Now, Julius, Heart of Iron, it's the first of what you hope to be quite a few of these books?
Yes, I'd like to write a whole bunch of them. Yeah, I would. I'd like to bring the Gothic back if I can.
Well, I think it's a wonderful and ambitious project but they've evolved over the years. They sort of sent off shoots into different areas.
They did, yeah.
And what was the first vampire Gothic? Well, going all the
way
back to
Frankenstein. In my book, I talk quite a lot about Dark Shadows, which was a real watershed moment. Because, you know, Barnabas Collins was, when he first came on the show, which was a soap opera, again, aimed toward women, he was sort of an evil character. But, you know, everybody watching it fell in love with him.
I loved that show.
Of course, me too.
I loved
that show. He would get truckloads of letters from women who were, you know, throwing themselves at him. And so gradually he became the star of the show. And, you know, you really see the influence of that in a lot of the Gothic novels that were published after 1967. They start to, you know, introduce more supernatural characters. There was even a line called the Satanic Gothics, which weren't very satanic, but they, you know, they were more paranormal in nature. Pre-runners to things like Twilight and Anne Rice.
Well, and in general, Gothics during the period that you're you're writing about. There's not, you know, too much sex or anything. It's just...
Oh, no, they're very clean.
They're very clean.
People of any age could read them.
Exactly.
There's absolutely no explicit sex. There's no explicit violence. I mean, they don't give you nightmares. If you call them horror at all, it's such a light nature, you know, no worse than what you see in a cozy mystery, really. That's about it. So I think that's one reason people like, one reason I like them. I mean, you don't have to worry that you're going to be disturbed or, you know, you're going to need brain bleach or something after you read it.
I like that, brain bleach.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, that's very
that's
clever.
Good.
we like that.
I have to remember that.
I think we're all going to remember that now, brain bleach.
Yeah.
That's good.
I use quite a bit of it.
So,
okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break and then we're going to be back.
Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. Final Exam by author Carol J. Peary is the latest in the author's Witch City mystery. Here's the buzz. Life at the house on Winter Street is a buzz with preparations for Aunt Ibby's 45th high school reunion, and Lee Barrett is happy to pitch in, but when the local police dredge up a vintage sports car containing human remains, well, Lee is thrilled to be the first reporter on the scene. She quickly learns the car is connected to a cold case her boyfriend Pete happens to be working on. But it's her Aunt Ibby's emotional reaction to Lee's TV report that puts her on the case. With the help of Orion, her psychic feline sidekick, she'll have to unravel a tangled past of secrets and promises to stop a killer from making history again. Final Exam by Carol Peary will keep readers guessing until the very twisted and eerie end. This is Rita Moreau, reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on the mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joyonpaper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
From the author of gut-wrenching novels Guns Up and Gunner's Glory, now a gut-wrenching comedy, Section 8. One fan writes, Section 8 is inspired insanity. Johnny Clark should receive the Pulitzer Prize and his commitment papers in the same ceremony. You will laugh till it hurts. Section 8, it's 1946, and President Harry Truman has two goals in life: dump the U.S. Marine Corps and get reelected. Can he convince Congress that the Marine Corps is obsolete? He'll try, but first he wants to use them one last time. There's something he needs them to do, a little mission to China to steal something that one of his contributors need. It's dangerous, but who cares? Marines are expendable, or so he thinks. What could possibly go wrong? A lawsuit by the Vatican? An attempted assassination by a dead assassin? Flamethrower sermons? If that's not enough, there's a missing A-bomb. This book has it all. Even a love story. Remember, Section 8 is only a temporary state. You Hope, written by a true American hero. You'll love this book, now available on Amazon. So get it today. Section 8 by Johnny Clark. Semper Fi.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With my guests,
Rita Moreau and Lori A. Page. As I said, I've read so many of the books that you talk about, and the ones that I haven't read, now I'm going to read. They're on my
Excellent.
Reading list, you know, and so that's why it's so much fun always to talk to somebody who just has found that joy on paper, and I think you certainly have.
Yeah, I mean, it really is my life's work. The only question is, what do I do now? My next goal, I guess, is to get some of those Gothic novels of my own written.
Well, I'm sure you will. It's.
I am thinking about doing a companion volume that would just deal with vampire books, too, since I do teach a course on that also.
And they are very popular.
Very popular. Although, on the wane right now, but they'll be back again. You know, they go through periods.
Exactly. They go through,
yeah.
There's a cycle, but...
There is a cycle.
They are very popular, and so...
Well, that's why I'm thinking Gothic might be ripe for a comeback, because it really hasn't come back in any meaningful way, you know, since 1993. So seems to me, you know, the time is ripe, don't you think?
I think so. I think
yeah.
They are books that, as I said, I love the fact that the women, I never read one where the woman was weak, ever.
I know.
There are obnoxious men.
Yeah, it's a misconception that people have. You'd be amazed how many people think they know all about romances in general and Gothic romances, but have never read one.
That's true. And
yeah.
And when I think even, you know, young women, I think they're very helpful. They put a lot of things in perspective for me. And I remember Jane Eyre. First, one of the things I remembered about that is he wasn't handsome. So you can
right.
look for somebody who's not handsome.
Yes.
And I think that's important, too.
He says to her, "Do you find me handsome?" And she says, "No,
no
sir."
No, sir. I love that line.
Me too.
The first time I read it, and now when I read it again, thanks to you, I reread the book, and I read that line, and I got such a kick out. I got such
I know,
a kick out
wonderful.
Of it, and I got such a kick out of how she told him off. And
oh yeah,
yeah.
And he takes it.
And he takes it. And I thought, whoa, power to you, girl, you did it.
That's right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I thought they made us feel then and now. They just make us feel good and powerful.
That's right.
So,
they're coming-of-age books for women, too, in a meaningful way. I mean, you know, male coming-of-age books are very different, aren't they? They're always about, you know, going to war, killing somebody, you know, killing an animal, something like that. Women's coming-of-age books are about learning to give love to someone who deserves it.
And I think you're on the right track with this book, and I'm really thrilled that I got to talk to you, and you know, every time you have a release, every time Rita has a release, she comes in here for an interview. Right, Rita?
I do.
So you make sure that you keep me up to date and
Absolutely.
Tell me whenever you have a release, and we'll have you back on and talk more.
Wonderful.
And I want to thank Bernadette Duncan. Her book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. I had so much fun interviewing her. I think I laugh
yes,
so much.
Yes, she's delightful.
She is absolutely delightful. And when I finish this interview with you, I'm going to play some highlights from my interview with her because I had so much fun talking to her. So thank you, Bernadette. I'm sure she's listening to this interview today because she's a strong promoter of your work.
Yes, and I know. I have my own agent.
Exactly. That's what you need, too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Lori.
It's been a real pleasure.
Wait. Don't leave yet.
Yes,
where can people... Do you have a Facebook page? Do you have...
I do, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, what is it?
It's just my name, Lori Page.
Without the A, Lori Page?
Yeah, it's just Lori Page, yeah.
Okay, because there is another Lori Page writer.
Oh, there's a lot of them, and my name is very popular.
Okay, but you got the Facebook page with Lori Page.
Yes, I did.
And it's the L-O-R-I.
So. Yes, and my profile picture is me with a ghost.
Cool. Oh, that's cool.
I'm gonna look for you.
Oh, it's not a real ghost, but it looks convincing. My sister called me up when she saw it and said, "Where did you find that ghost?" And I said, "Well, it's an app, actually." But
well, that's great. Okay, Lori Page, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. It's been a joy talking to you, and we'll have you back as soon as you get the next book published. Okay.
Okay. Well, that'll be about a year.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Bye bye now.
Bye. Lori.
She's nice, isn't she?
Really?
Oh, you will love this book when you get it. Now, as I promised, I will play some highlights from my interview with Bernadette Duncan Harrison about her book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. As a radio producer for over 30 years, she has worked with some of the biggest names in the business. Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and many more. I love behind-the-scene books, and Bernadette's is particularly funny. Not only is she candid, boy oh boy is she candid, she tells us some of the behind-the-scenes encounters that she's had with famous people. Just that alone makes the book fun. But she also talks about the radio business and shares insights into human nature. It's fun to read about the famous people that she has worked with over the years. Here are some highlights from my interview with Bernadette back in November 2016. Wow. Bernadette, I know that you're listening today, so I want to thank you again for introducing me to Lori Page. I really enjoyed talking to her about her book, The Gothic Romance Wave. Anyway, here goes, my radio sister. Sit back and enjoy listening to yourself, because I certainly enjoy listening to you. Well, today I have a fantastic guest. Bernadette Duncan has written a delightful book called Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers. Hi, Bernadette.
Hello, Patsy, and thank you so much for the invitation to be with you.
Well, this is thrilling for me. As a famous radio producer, you have written a really fun little book here of what it's like to be in a radio station, and I just love it.
Well, I imagine you would, you know, in our few email exchanges, you indicated that you've had a couple of wacky things happen as well.
Nothing like yours. You know, actually, I'm a little bit intimidated by you because you have worked with some of the most famous and greatest radio personalities of all time. I'm not sure how I'm going to be doing, and you can always just step in there and produce me.
Oh, no, Patsy, you know, the funny thing is that maybe they... We're famous, but I'm just a regular girl from Queens, New York. You know what I mean? I listen to you and you're authentic. And that is beautiful.
I enjoy it so much. It's so funny. You know, I had never thought about being in radio. So it's really lots
wow.
of fun.
And you're doing a great service to have this niche kind of programming. You know, everybody else is talking politics, and you're talking about this meaningful, often heart-wrenching stuff that makes people human, you know, thanks to authors, if they can mold that all together.
The authors love to tell their stories. And I think it helps every reader has their favorite author and for them to hear a little bit more about their author, to just have that connection, I think is so wonderful.
Yes, agree.
Of course, I didn't know all of the production side. And so it was so much fun for me when I was reading your book and I said, oh, wow, there are people back there who actually do all this work. So it was fun to find out that there are people like you who do things.
And also, Patsy, you'd be surprised that there are also some of these big, gigantic hosts who also do a lot of legwork. Some of them actually do their own legwork as well. Some of them don't.
And some of them want you to do everything.
Yeah, but that's what I get paid for.
You know, I don't know even know where to start, but let's start with Sally Jesse Raphael, because everybody knows her, and of course you worked with her quite closely.
Yes. Yeah, so my book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers.
I love
that
title.
That's the big broad stroke. But it was Sally that basically threw me my lifeline into this career that I eventually entered. I was a teenager, and she was on the radio in my house where I was growing up. And one day, while all my friends were writing fan letters to all their rock star favorites, I wanted to write to Sally. And 2 weeks later, I was the only one who got a letter back. And it started me paying attention to her in a different way, because it was now really personal. Years later, I end up working at NBC Radio Networks, where she was doing a talk show at night. And I was down the hall and eventually had an opportunity to fill in for a sick producer, and had an opportunity to work with Sally. She was part fairy godmother and part rascal. You know, she was quite a colorful woman with adopted kids. And there was always a control room full of people laughing and just sitting around and enjoying her nightly show while she was on the other side of the glass. I had opportunity to work with her and become a regular. Sally was your, you know, favorite aunt, your favorite neighbor over the fence. She was talking about family problems or awkward situations, or what do you do when, you know, after you divorce, how do you go out dating for the first time? Or one of my wackiest phone calls was, what do I do with a dead horse that I found on my front lawn? And though we knew she did not know the answer, we knew she would come up with something very colorful, even if it meant opening up the phones to listeners. Crazy stuff, because she was such a colorful woman.
When you were with Larry King, well, now you had all sorts of guests, from movie actors to politicians to authors. Did he decide on who he wanted to talk to, or did you come out with a list for him of suggestions? How did that work?
I love your question, Patsy, because he was an interesting kind of different sort of talk show host. He had in his team about four producers. The producers basically booked that show. They knew he liked exactly what you said, celebrities, politicians, authors. It was a People magazine on parade. You didn't really have to ask him questions, and he was very honest with his listeners, as he was with us, and that is, he never read the book. And what we did was we would brainstorm a guest, give him a lineup, and then talking points. You give them a package of talking points, maybe the book. And I was a very young producer. I got very lucky, about 24, 25 years old. And I was the one, like basically the low guy on the food chain. And I was in the control room, and I would be handing him the package each guest got. I would walk in. I mean, you know, you'd think, what, does this take like a whole college, you know, degree? No, but it's a kind of people skill. And I would walk in the package to him. He would then quickly scan the talking points and then start his interview. And as you might have read in the book, Yappy Days, he didn't always know the whole background of a guest. So, and that got kind of interesting. And if you want, I could tell you that story.
Oh, go ahead. That's okay. Why we have you here.
Okay.
We want the inside dope on this.
Well, this is basically connecting all the dots of all these questions you're asking me. So I'm sitting there. I handed him information, or a little bit. He has a guest on the phone. So this particular guest happened not to be a celebrity, happened not to be a politician. She was an author, but not of a topic that Larry knew. This was an author of a book on childhood sexual abuse. And Larry was going to speak to her for 15 minutes, but it felt like it was going to be 15 years. because I'm sitting there and I could see through the glass that this man is squirming in his chair. Now, again, to remind you, I'm a young producer. I'm new on the job. I think I had the job for maybe 2 weeks. And my boss had told me, whatever you do, you do not talk to him unless he speaks to you. You just be available to help out, you know, bring him coffee, walk the talking points into him. Well, I'm watching him squirm and I'm hearing the voice of my boss, like, whatever you do, don't talk to him. I had to make a judgment call, and I speak into the little earpiece, the little talk back button, into Larry's earpiece, because I had read 17 magazine for years. And I talked into his earpiece and I said, okay, Larry, ask, at what point when you're dating somebody do you tell them about your history? All of a sudden, he looked at me, and out from his mouth came the words, at what point when you're dating somebody do you tell them about your history? I nearly fainted. Because all of a sudden, my 24-year-old mind is thinking, oh my gosh, he just said my words across 350 stations around the country. I was shocked. And that started a few more questions over the course of those 15 minutes, and my life changed because I realized I could be an important part of a team. And, you know, I'm a middle child. I'm a good team player, and I found my place.
It's exactly these kind of little stories in this book, Yappy Days, that make it so much fun to read. I want readers to buy the book and read it, but we'll talk about a few of the people and a few that surprised me, like Jerry Springer. I did not realize what he was like because I sort of have been off put by his antics on television, and I never really thought of him as being intelligent, but you saw a different side.
Right? Isn't that something? Yeah, it was just an amazing thing. And again, it goes back to you never know anybody. Even when they come into the studio, you don't know them. But in these cases, like Letterman or Jerry Springer was such a warm, gentle, such a good-hearted soul and had such gratitude about his life. And then as a producer, I had done research about him before he came in, and I discovered he wasn't even American. He came from, I think, from England, came across on, I guess it was like the Queen Mary or something, and he made this amazing life for himself. At one point, he was even mayor of Cincinnati. This was, a man who treasured his American life and spoke about it as a guest, as he had opportunity to live the American dream. And in person, he was just a very nice man. And you know this is his life philosophy. But look, he had an amazing career. It was a little kind of wacky on his reality crazy Jerry Springer show that required that they even had like police officers nearby because it was just so out of hand. But why not? I mean, he made himself a great career and a household name here.
Let's talk a little bit about David Letterman.
It was probably one of the more surprising experiences for me as a young producer with, again, Larry King, because you see him on TV every night as this outgoing, funny guy, and he's actually extraordinarily shy. The night he joined Larry King and he came across the street from the studios, he was new now to the CBS network, and came across the street to where we were broadcasting Larry's show, and he was surrounded by all these handlers, though I did not know it was him. He had a baseball cap pulled down in front of his face, and they marched right into the studio. He sat down in the guest's seat, and he had his back to me, an engineer producer, for the whole hour, the entire hour. I could not even read his face. I couldn't tell if he was whatever. And when you're a producer, you kind of have to monitor how people are doing through any sort of facial cues, right? But he was very shy. Surprising.
He doesn't look like he's shy.
Okay, well, those are a few highlights from my interview with Bernadette, and I want to thank her again, and Lori Page, and of course, Rita Moreau, our special radio reader who does the book buzzes.
April 1st is the deadline for the self-published authors to submit their books to Writer's Digest. Please, if you've published a book, try. You don't know. You never know which famous literary agent or famous New York City agent or New York City editor will be reading your story, your book. And they might just fall in love with it and you could win. Maybe not the first prize, but some prize. And in any case, you'll get a wonderful, wonderful analysis of your book that you will really learn a great deal from. So the deadline is April 1st. Go to writersdigest.com and submit your book. And you never know. Because as I have told you all, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're really lucky to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a film. And as I just want to say one more time, get Carol J. Perry's Final Exam. That's her most recent book. And then you'll be able to say, I read her books before she got her deal on television for a miniseries, because I really believe in her. She started with Joy on Paper. She was my first guest in the studio, and it's the four-year anniversary of Joy on Paper. So I want to thank Carol for being my first guest and to tell her how much I appreciate her support over the years. And please go to my webpage, radio-joyonpaper, and check out some of the interviews I've had during, you know, I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of authors. It's really quite amazing. I'm still in shock. So please do that. And also go to my Facebook page and like me, and I will like you and all of that kind of stuff, because it's important. Anyway, again, thank you all for all of your nice messages to me. I really appreciate it. And I've got some wonderful guests coming up. But on Thursday is Bill Larson, and he is our legal eagle. He will answer your legal questions. So if you have any, go to my webpage and fill in the form, and I will have Bill answer your questions. Again, bye-bye now. Say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Just, I'm so grateful to him. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. Bye-bye now.
Just one more thing today. I would like to play a very special song for a very special person. And I hope you take some time while you listen to this music to think about your family, about the people that you love, and to treasure them. Remember to always keep in touch with the joys of your life.